From 90.7 WFAE, this is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Teenagers have always engaged in rebellious, sometimes irresponsible behavior. Chalk it up to youth and poor judgment. The most recent example of this is teen takeovers of public spaces where large groups of young people gathered to cause disruption, often resulting in property damage and endangerment to themselves and others. It's happening more and more in cities like Charlotte and Raleigh. Here, Romare Bearden Park seems to be a common location for these events, and recently Charlotte leaders met to decide how to handle them. A look at what's driving these gatherings, what they say about adolescent behavior, and the solutions and alternatives being considered this hour on Charlotte Talks. First, the news. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Teen takeovers have become a phenomenon around the country, and not a good one. Charlotte and Raleigh have had several incidences of these gatherings in which large groups of teens take over public spaces, causing disruption and sometimes engaging in destructive behavior. Because of the number of individuals involved and a collective lack of judgment, those taking part in these takeovers often pose a threat to themselves or others. And now, leaders are taking notice and working on solutions. This week, Charlotte City Council's Safety Committee called a special meeting to discuss what is becoming a public safety issue. According to a release after that meeting, quote, Uptown, specifically the area near Romare Bearden Park, has experienced significant weekend juvenile criminal activities, shootings, and curfew violations. And these takeovers increase the risk of violent crime, vehicular and pedestrian-related accidents, and other quality-of-life concerns. Of course, Romare Bearden Park isn't the only location that has experienced takeovers, but whatever, wherever they occur, they have become a serious concern, especially for CMPD Chief Estella Patterson, who had a warning for City Council.
If we don't get a handle on this, the consequences may become fatal.
This hour, we talk about why these events take place, how they take place, how they're organized, the problems they posed, and we'll look at some possible solutions. Dante Anderson is with us. She's a city council member representing District 1 and the chair of the council's safety committee. She's here along with Dr. Susan McCarter, professor at the School of Social Work at UNC Charlotte, and Quentin Canty is a recent graduate of West Charlotte High with plans to attend Hampton University in the fall. He was also president of the student body at West Charlotte when he was there. Thank you all for being here. Good morning. Before we begin, I want to mention that CMPD was asked to join us for this program today, but could not provide a guest, and they directed us to the YouTube recording of the meeting. Not helpful. We also asked both the Huntersville PD and Raleigh PD to provide a guest to join this discussion. They were both unable to do so. So Dante, I'm going to begin with you. Define what we're talking about. What do we mean when we're talking about these so-called teen takeovers? And some people view the words teen takeovers as a pejorative term, but let's, for the sake of discussion, how do you define them?
Absolutely. And thank you for having me this morning, Mike. Teen takeovers have become really a national phenomenon. It's not something particular to Charlotte or even the great state of North Carolina. We have seen large crowds of teens, literally from 12, 13 years old and up, congregating in public spaces in a quasi-organized fashion where, you know, there would be a date and a time that's published to come out and be a part of something. And most come out in a very innocent fashion, but then it only takes a few bad actors to begin to incite activity or have guns or weapons of violence. And then you have this sort of riotous reaction that occurs. And so that's what we've been seeing locally here. In particular, since school has been out, we've had these teen takeovers occur occur in the University City area, in Revere Beard, over in Camp North End. There's really, even on the interstate as well, there's really no space where they haven't occurred within our city. And as the chief has mentioned several times, we just need to be able to get a handle on this.
Yeah. What's the average size of the crowd in these takeovers? I know it ranges greatly, but what's the average size?
Well, what we've seen thus far is anywhere from 300-400 as a base crowd, but we've seen crowds up to over 1,000 teenagers. And the real impetus is parents are dropping their teenagers off at these events, thinking that this is something that's safe and that it's a space where their teens can enjoy themselves. But really, it's really an unsafe environment where there's no guardians, there's no structure, and really there's no indication of what's going to happen over the hours to come.
And when you're at a shopping mall or at a park and suddenly 300 or 400 people show up, that your antenna are going to go up. I don't care what age group those people are or who those people are. Suddenly 300 people descending on you can make you a little uneasy. And in Raleigh, on the 4th of July, they had a crowd of 5,000 to 8,000 people, which we'll talk about a little bit later on. How many takeovers are we talking about, Dante, for this to come to the attention of CMPD and the Safety Committee? What are we talking about in the last 6 to 12 months?
In the last 6 to 12 months, we've seen well over 8 of these takeovers, 8 to 12 takeovers. They're highly publicized on social media. And so whomever is the leader of these takeovers will put something on social media, and it'll, of course, get cascaded down and shared. And we've seen it become more and more violent as they have progressed. And that's the real crux of this, is because you don't really know who is at the center of organizing these takeovers. And we actually discussed this at the Public Safety Committee meeting as well, is can we somehow put our finger on who is organizing this? And we're trying to do a better job of that. CMPD is certainly trying to investigate that. But you don't know if there are nefarious actors at play or if this is just some innocent opportunity for teens to get together. You don't know. It's an unknown box.
So, Susan, you're the social worker here, and we've been talking about the fact that this is not just unique to this area. It's a national phenomenon, and many of these events may be copycat events, because if something is successful in one place because of social media and the news, hey, well, let's try it here. That looks like fun, or it looks like some mischief we can get into. Do you see this as a phase or a fad? I remember a couple of years ago, there were concerns about, and I forgot the exact term of what we used to call it, but through Uptown Charlotte, young people would get in their cars and just take over the street. They would ride down the street, and people were very concerned about that, and that no longer happens. Is this just a fad?
Likely it will morph into different shapes and sizes, different mechanisms. Clearly, social media, as Council Member Anderson mentioned, plays a role in how many young people show up for these events. But I think it's really important to think about why teens are drawn to gatherings like this. The sociologist Oldenburger talks about third spaces. For those who aren't familiar with that terminology, first space is home. Second space is work, or for youth, it's school. And then third space is a place where folks can foster community, they can socialize, they can have that. Council Member Anderson said kids want to be a part of something. Yeah. It's that sense of belonging. So we see that in different shapes and sizes and mechanisms.
I want to talk some more about third places a little bit later on in the program. Quentin Canty is with us. As I said, he's a graduate of West Charlotte High. He's a young guy, just graduated on the way to college. I'm going to wager, because you were the president of the student body, that you never participated in one of these takeovers. I could be wrong, and you can tell me if I am, but I'm going to wager that you didn't participate. But put me in the mindset of young people who plan to participate or who in fact participate in these. What is the drawing card? What makes them, I don't know, popular?
Well, first, I want to answer your question about me going to takeovers or not. I mean, I haven't explicitly said that I was going to a takeover or have been at a takeover, but I've seen takeovers and I've been in places where takeovers have happened, like wrong place, wrong time kind of thing. But I feel as if, and I'm only speaking for me, if it connects to anybody else, then, you know, but I feel like many, like Miss McCarter said and like Dante said, we're looking for an outlet and we need a place where we can just congregate. And I know the people that kind of promote this on social media, they're not thinking about violence in the moment. They're thinking about just having a good time with a bunch of friends or even making new friends. So having that third space is like what Ms. McCarter said, fostering that community, having those bonds and being able to just, you know, have fun with people that are around your age. You know, we've always been at school. We're always at home. We spend most of our time at school. So in the summer, we just want to be out and about with our peers.
These things,
in a non-school setting.
These things are not organic. They are organized, loosely organized, or seriously organized. I'm not sure which, but if you're going to get on social media and you're going to say, we're going to have this get together and it's going to be at such and such a place at such and such a time, come on down, that then clearly there is something attractive about this. What do people, the organizers of these events, what, Quentin, do they hope to achieve? And is it just for the people who attend? Do they just hope that they can make a social connection? It's just something to do? Is that what it is?
I think it's really just the opportunity to get a big turnout for these takeovers. I don't think there's any kind of violent, you know, prerogative. I think it's, you know, just an opportunity to hang out and having like these building social capital.
So these are opportunities, I suppose. They're viewed as potential opportunities for having fun. But the fact is, sometimes we've had this instance at Burkdale Village where a horde of young people descended on Burkdale Village and they were walking on the hoods of automobiles in the middle of the street. They were going through the shopping center. I don't know if they committed any acts of vandalism or destructive behavior, but when that happens, is that, how does that happen? Why does that happen? That is not the intent. Am I right, Quentin?
That is correct. And I want to take something that Dante said earlier. It's only a few bad apples in that bunch that incite the entire crowd. And I don't want it to seem like everybody comes to those third spaces and is just ready for a fight or is just ready to, you know, wreak havoc and cause juvenile delinquency, because that's not the idea. Like I said earlier, the idea is just, you know, to have fun, but sometimes it just happens to end up in a fight.
Dante, I know you want to comment.
Yes, I think Quentin said something that's really pivotal here. If you think about it, most of our youth are in school for the majority of the days.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and United Way of Greater Charlotte, celebrating 95 years of impact in the Carolinas, strengthening nonprofits, neighborhoods, and people through the support of charitable contributions. More at UnitedWayGreaterCLT.org.
They're used to being around young people. And then in the summertime in particular, we're seeing this flare up now where there is this desire to be around other youth but there's not a space for it. I happen to grow up in a time where Eastland Mall was wonderful and I could go and congregate there in the summertime, but I can't anymore, Mr. Collins.
But you do have the Eastland Mall logo up behind you over your right shoulder.
I do.
Yeah, Eastland Mall had an ice skating rink, movie theaters. It was the place to be in the 80s and the 70s. Absolutely. We have to take a break. We're coming back with more in just a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and United Way of Greater Charlotte, celebrating 95 years of impact in the Carolinas, strengthening nonprofits, neighborhoods, and people through the support of charitable contributions. More at UnitedWayGreaterCLT.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the recent phenomenon of teen takeovers, hundreds of teenagers or more. Descending on public spaces and taking them over, sometimes for fun, sometimes violence breaks out. We'll talk about that and solutions to that because it's come to the attention of both CMPD and the Charlotte City Council's Safety Committee. The chairman of that committee, Dante Anderson, is with us. He represents District 1 on council. Quentin Canty is a graduate of West Charlotte High School, and Dr. Susan McCarter is with us, professor in the School of Social Work at UNC Charlotte. I was going to ask you, Susan, if these events are illustrative of the stage of development of teenage brains, because we know that particularly for young men, their brain is not fully developed until well into their 20s. And as a result, they make some foolish decisions over time. But then there's the January 6th incident at the Capitol, where some people legitimately went to protest what they thought was a bogus election and attempted to make their displeasure known to Congress as they counted the votes. Other people took it upon themselves to break into the Capitol, and we all know what happened as a result of that. But they were all swept up in this. Some people didn't enter the Capitol, some people did, and some people who did enter the Capitol didn't mean to. They didn't mean to be destructive, but they were part of the event. This seems very similar to these teen takeovers, is it?
Yes and no. Didn't see that direction coming, but we can go there. I'm not an expert on January 6th, but I would love to talk about the difference between adolescent brains, teenage brains, and adult brains, because right before the break, you mentioned a gathering where teens came together and then started walking on hoods of cars, potentially vandalism happened. And Quentin mentioned that young people come together with innocent rationale, want that sense of belonging, want to be together with people their own age. Council member Anderson talked about they're not in school, and so it's a time to be together, potentially forge new social relationships. That's what we can examine how adolescent and adult brains differ. The major reason, the major way that they differ is adolescents don't have fully developed prefrontal cortexes. So what does your prefrontal cortex do? It's in charge of planning. It's in charge of understanding and projecting consequences. It's in charge of impulse control. So when you don't have those parts of your brain fully developed, can't make that rationale for the January 6th example, but I very much can for young people at teen takeovers. They don't have the decision-making capacity that adults do.
So if they cannot...
At the same time, they have hyperactive striatum. So their brains not only are controlled by the emotional center, the amygdala, instead of the prefrontal cortex, in addition to that, they have hyperarousal going on. So they are more interested in seeking immediate gratification, instant gratification, rewards, And they have a heightened sense of response or thrill in the moment, as opposed to adults who don't experience the same thing.
So if, because their prefrontal cortex is not as fully developed as it might be as an adult, they cannot properly gauge risk and calculate consequences. So because of that, if they come there with peaceful intent, if they come to these gatherings simply because they want to have fun, they want to be around others, they want something to do, they want to make social connections, and suddenly mischief breaks out, are people of that age, can they be influenced by that? Would they then think to themselves, that looks like fun, let's do that too?
Absolutely, absolutely. So their bodies haven't matured, their brains haven't matured, their identities haven't been fully formed, and their hormones are raging. That's why peer influence is so strong in that time period. Additionally, we know that if we can keep kids out of trouble during that time period, the age crime curve is going to take over, because the older you get, the less likely you are to commit any crimes. Councilmember Anderson.
Well, I completely agree with what you said, and I would just like to say, insert parental and guardian guidance, right? Because everything that you just said necessitates some accountability for someone who is properly positioned to make these decisions. And that's what CMPD has been trying to do over the last several months, as well as council, is hold the parents accountable, in particular for the repeat offenders, because any young person can get caught up in the moment in one of these things, right? And heaven forbid something happens, like the last takeover where there was a youth who was shot in the head just to participate in one of these takeovers. But someone who is repeatedly out and about doing these things, we need our parents and our guardians to insert themselves and be accountable for where their kids are, and to understand what's going on in the lives of their young people.
Quentin, this is clearly a subset of young people who participate in these things. I suppose it could be anybody at any time, because if the mood strikes you, you might do it. But if every teenager in Charlotte did this, we would be descended on every single day, all the time. So who are the people most likely to participate in these things? Who are these young people?
I would say there's really not a specific area that you can pinpoint to who might come out, because it's honestly just teens everywhere in Charlotte. Anybody that has that sense of that desire to belong, and that sense of, like Ms. McCarter said, instant gratification or the thrill and the adrenaline, they're going to want to go out to one of these takeovers. And like Dante Anderson said, it's really up to the parents to kind of guide them, because I know me, I got a curfew. I already had a curfew before this curfew was implemented. And on top of that, even if I didn't have the curfew, I would already know, because of the way that I was raised, like, once I'm ready to go, I'm ready to go. And I'm gonna be right back at the house trying to rub my feet together by 10 o'clock.
Never heard that expression. Dante, clearly City Council has become concerned about this. You and members of the Safety Committee just recently met about it this week. In fact, CMPD is concerned about this. We're going to hear from Estella Patterson in a moment. She's the chief of police. But what was there one single event, or was it a collective amount of these events that made you decide, we need to talk about this, we need to meet about this?
Yes, I would say that there is a confluence of events that have occurred, and the progressive violent nature of these takeovers, or the outcome of these takeovers, have become more violent. So when we begin to see shootings, when we begin to see people getting trampled, injury, then there is a concern as it relates to public safety. But what I want to say first and foremost is that these youth protection ordinances is nothing new. We've had a youth protective ordinance on the books here in the Queen City since 1995. What we did in the meeting just earlier this week was just to shore that up, to push up the time of the curfew and to expand the age limit. But we're seeing that occur, as we mentioned, throughout the country and some of our peer cities, Nashville, Minneapolis, Indianapolis, Washington, D.C., and other cities are making these adjustments due to the activity that we're seeing, as well as in Raleigh and Winston-Salem, cities within the great state of North Carolina. And so it's to give CMPD a tool. What I want to say is that this is not a silver bullet where it's going to cure all ills. It's just one tool. We need other mitigation strategies. We need to lean into additional third spaces for our youth. The city is doing our part. We want other community leaders to do their parts. But this is just one tool to educate parents, make sure teens are inside if they're not in structured activities, and to hold parents and guardians accountable.
At the City Council's Safety Committee meeting, you began the meeting this week with a video compilation of events that have happened here and around the country in these takeovers. Yes. And when you look at the video, it looks rather dramatic, and they are, because if you're in the midst of it, if you're having dinner out and suddenly 300 people are coming down the street, that can get your attention. And at your meeting, CMPD Chief Estella Parsons spoke about recent events here in Charlotte.
I will share with you that on June 14th, I observed in real time what happens when a large group of teens congregate with no specific purpose in mind, especially after dark. Early that morning, we experienced a shootout in our center city near Ramir Bearden Park, in which a 15-year-old and an 18-year-old were shot. The shooter was 16, and he provided a full confession of what occurred. Several innocent bystanders were impacted, those who were just out to have a good time or just out to have dinner, because of the mass chaos that resulted from that incident. On July 4th, we saw another large gathering of youth around Ramir Bearden Park, and I am confident that the only reason we did not have another shooting or a major incident was because we had over 200 officers in a small geographic area working. While this worked on that day, it is not sustainable to deploy that many officers every single weekend. We don't have the staffing, nor do we have the budget for it. Most recently, this past weekend in University City, near the boardwalk, we had another mass gathering of 200 to 300 youth that resulted in fights and disorder and a firearm being confiscated from a 16-year-old.
CMPD Chief Estella Patterson there speaking at the recent Safety Committee meeting. She mentioned firearms and shots being fired, Dante, at two of those incidences, but not every one of these gatherings, not every one of these teen takeovers have involved firearms. Many just seem like teens gone wild, for lack of a better term. Do you or your committee or CMPD see these things any differently than that?
Well, what we see is, as Ms. McCarter talked about, teens need a space to be, just to be young and express their energy and their outlets. The thing is that it can occur in public spaces, in particular after dark, right? And that's what we need to focus on, is giving the proper outlets for our teens. The city of Charlotte does not govern parks and recs. That falls within Mecklenburg County's purview, right? But I do know that within Uptown, at least, Mecklenburg County has added additional security to certain park spaces within the four wards of Uptown. But we've seen these takeovers occur out in Camp North End. We've seen them occur in University City. We've seen them occur literally on the interstate. And so we can't really dictate where this is going to happen, which is what Chief Patterson is speaking to. We don't know where it's going to happen. Sometimes there's awareness, sometimes there isn't. But there just happened to be an actual event where CMPD was uptown while this was going on. So you had a high congregation of officers that were proximate to Ramir Bearden Park.
So, Quentin, help me understand how this happens. I know they're organized. The word goes out on social media. We're going to get together tonight at 8 o'clock at such and such a place. Come on down. But who makes that decision? Is it just individuals coming up with an idea off the at the spur of the moment, putting it on their social media feed and hoping people show up? Is that how it works? Or is there something more organized to it than that?
I've seen some be more organized with, you know, planning ahead. Like, I've seen some, like, be premeditated for later this month, but it was planned all the way up until last month. And I've seen some be a spur of the moment. There's not really, like I said earlier, there's not really a way to pinpoint what, like, what's the decision making behind it. And sometimes it is, like Ms. McCarter said earlier, about us having a lack of a fully grown prefrontal cortex. We lack that impulse, like that planning kind of.
And I think it's important for us, while we're holding the truth of it being scary when lots of people are out together after dark, I think we also need to recognize that since the mid-90s, juvenile crime has decreased steadily, most significantly during the COVID-19 pandemic. We then saw an uptick after people came back together. We saw crime rates go up a little bit, but now they're actually, since 2024, they're actually starting to decrease again. So they remain considerably lower than they were in the 90s. Additionally, we need to contextualize violent crime, because that's what you heard Chief Patterson speak to. Violent crime for young people is less than 10% of all youth crime is violent crime. When we look at statistics of the 500,000 arrests that were made in 24 across the US for violent crimes, only about 37,000 were for young people under the age of 18. That's less than 7.5%. So it's a blip. It does happen. It is scary. But there are ways to combat it, to address it, to protect.
Which we will talk about. But you bring up an interesting point that we're talking about a tiny little subset of people, even the ones that involved these 5,000 people in Raleigh or 8,000 people in Raleigh. It's a tiny number of teenagers who live in that city taking part in all of this. When we come back, I want to talk about the violence that can occur at these, and the fact that there were gunshots here in Charlotte, and there were three people shot in Raleigh during that July 4th gathering, which caused the Raleigh police chief to be very concerned about the events. I'm wondering why young people aren't concerned about it, or more concerned about it, and we'll talk about that when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the phenomenon of teen takeovers today and what City Council is considering. They've already proposed this curfew, which we've alluded to, but we'll get to the specifics of that in a moment or two with Dante Anderson, Charlotte City Council District 1 representative and the chair of the Safety Committee on Council. Susan McCarter's with us. Dr. McCarter's a professor of social work in the School of Social Work at UNC Charlotte. And Quentin Canty is the former head of the student body at West Charlotte High, where he is a graduate and on his way to college this summer. But on July 4th, Quentin, in Raleigh, as we've said, a crowd of estimated between 5,000 and 8,000 teenagers under 18 gathered in one area of that town, and three shootings occurred at different times within a one-block area. Given the frequency of gun violence in the community at large, and we've had these incidents of these takeovers here involving some guns, do young people even think about the danger that might be surrounding them with evil, not evil, but bad actors in their midst who might bring guns to this and use them?
Well, I think some people that come to these takeovers just have, you know, that, you know, beginning with an end in mind, you know, having a good time, congregating, meeting some friends or making new friends. Nobody's really thinking about the violent aspect because nobody's planning for there to be violence at these takeovers. It's not just posted on social media saying, hey, we're about to, this is a fight takeover that's happening down the street at such and such time. No, we're just trying to find that third space and have an opportunity to bond with people that are our age. However, there are times where violence can be seen and violence does occur. And that's something that can't be seen, but it can be taken into account with these takeovers. And I feel as if we're starting to see that now with teens that, because I'm not going to no takeover. I'm not going to no takeover.
So you mentioned, Dante, a few minutes ago, this youth protection ordinance that most people maybe have forgotten about or didn't know about, which came into being in the mid-90s. And it's something that CMPD Chief Estella Patterson called for a change to.
We must revise our youth protection ordinance.
So what does it call for now, and what is being proposed?
Yes, well, what's being proposed now is that anyone who is effectively 17 years old or under needs to have a curfew for 9 p.m. citywide. Now, there are various exceptions for this. If you're at an organized event, if you're with a parent or a guardian, someone who is above 18 years old or over, if you are running an errand or going to work, et cetera, there are various exceptions. However, the difficulty is currently our youth protection ordinance says that young people who are 13 and 14 years old can be outside until 11 p.m. And then there's a differentiating factor for those who are older than 14 years old. No one under 18 has an ID. That's just the reality of it. They may have a school ID, but they don't carry it with them all the time, and it doesn't indicate their age. So there's a difficulty for an officer or anyone to differentiate who's 13, who's 15, who's 17. And so this non-staggered approach of saying, if you are effectively a youth and you are not independently on your own, you need to either have a curfew, or you need to be at a structured activity or doing something else. That's what Chief Patterson is presenting to council. That's what we reviewed and also reviewed with our peer cities, as well as other cities here in the great state of North Carolina.
I'm looking at Quentin. I don't know Quentin. I just met him this morning before the show started. I only have a frame of reference in that he recently graduated from West Charlotte. So I know about how old he may or may not be. He could be 17. He could be 18. He could be 19. I don't know. But when you look at him, he could also be 25. How do you, Quentin, how do you identify a young person who does not carry a driver's license because they're not old enough to drive, but who may look considerably older?
That is a great question. Oh my goodness. Well, there's not really a way to identify people's age just by looking at them, because looks can be deceiving.
Yeah.
As we've seen a lot of times, like you just said, I might look 25. I'm 18, by the way, guys. But there's considerably younger people that are like 14 and 15 that have the same amount of facial hair as me, because puberty works in different ways for different people. Right. So you wouldn't be able to specifically pinpoint somebody's age just based off of their looks, which is, I think, what Dante and Miss Patterson was trying to convey at the special meeting, that it's kind of hard to police it when
exactly.
you don't.
And that is something that Charlotte City Council member Ed Driggs is also a part of this committee brought up. And he asked Chief Patterson about what kind of approach law enforcement should take. He asked if police were going to end up arresting a whole lot of people who are up to 18 years old. And here's what Chief Patterson had to say in response.
We would take a progressive enforcement approach where we start with warnings, with educating the public about the new ordinance as well, or the revision to the ordinance. And then we would go from there to warnings and then take an enforcement action. And certainly we would take enforcement if we absolutely have to when there's those situations. We recognize, and I believe that Major Tellis said it, that many of our youth want to do the right thing. They just happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time for things to go badly. We recognize there might be situations where you have youth that are out playing basketball or soccer or something like that. We're not trying to penalize, if you will, these young people. We want to educate and educate parents on it, and also to just the safety overall. That is our goal, to make sure that our young people are in safe environments.
But how do you police it? How do you enforce it? How do you determine how old somebody is if they don't carry identification, Dante?
Well, you know, Mike, what I want to say to Quentin's point, you know, I've seen young people who look to me like they're 13 years old or 12 years old and they're 18 years old. I'm like, wow, this is an adult? So you really can't dictate how puberty hits young people in general. It really is a spectrum. But what the chief is saying in essence is, listen, we need an opportunity for CMPD to have a tool to enforce certain gatherings throughout the city that could potentially turn unlawful. This is not about stopping a young person walking down the street or in a structured, activity like playing basketball or soccer or anything of that nature. It's not about stopping those folks. It's not about criminalizing youth. It's about when you're in a space where a young person can say, and I've heard CMPD say this to me several times, hey, I'm older than 16. You can't do anything to me. They're in that gray space, but they don't have ID because they're not at the age to have ID. And there's an enforcement era that occurs there. So what Chief Patterson talked about was this progressive, aggressive approach, which is around education, educating the youth and educating the parents, but then providing a warning to the youth and parents, and then eventually get into a citation if needed. But it's not starting with citation.
Would the citation go to the young person or to the parent?
Well, it's largely with the parent for someone who is a juvenile, right? Mm-hmm. And they've written citations this year and throughout the last calendar year for parents who, again, have youth who are repeatedly outside unaccompanied by a guardian that is, interacting in nefarious behavior.
Dante. Excuse me, Quentin.
So I think that this plan to have this curfew is necessary for the events that have been, that happened in most recent times. But I also feel as if we're sort of looking at the glass half empty instead of the glass half full. Let's kind of gear towards, why are young people acting like this? Why can't we have more structured events? Why can't we have that, opportunities that are marketed to us? Because we're trying to seek out these events ourselves because we don't have these events already available to us and at our disposal. We need more resources within Charlotte, within Mecklenburg County, for us to be able to come together. I don't remember the last time that I've been to a kind of teen outlet until I was at the YMCA, the Mercury YMCA. They used to have teen nights where you could play basketball, you could do fitness, you could swim, watch movies. We need more spaces like that, more third spaces where we can be able to congregate, where it's perfectly planned and stuff like that.
I want to come back to the third spaces before we run out of time. So a quick answer to this, Susan, because they're talking about because these are events are happening all over the country. They're talking about imposing curfews or changing curfews in places like Detroit, Chicago, Washington, D.C. We are having this discussion. I believe they're having this discussion in Raleigh. From your research and your understanding of what's going on here, do curfews work? Are they effective?
So the answer is it depends. We council member Anderson spoke eloquently earlier about the role that parents play. And I loved what Quentin said about what happens at his house. So the answer is parental and familial curfews work. Countywide, jurisdiction-wide curfews don't.
Why?
The evidence is very clear. There were multiple systematic reviews of the scientific literature. You can Google Marshall Project, Campbell Collaboration, and curfew, and you'll see that evidence. I hope that as we move forward, I know that CMPD and City Council both strive to make data-based decisions. And so I'm hopeful that moving forward with the idea of curfews, that they will keep that in mind. The evidence says that jurisdictionally imposed curfews, council member Anderson referenced the youth ordinance was passed in 95. That was the height of juvenile crime nationwide. And so that's why everybody has curfews on the books from then. Curfews have largely been credited with straining relationships between police and youth in communities. They have been credited with increased violence in many communities. So communities that tried curfews actually saw upticks. A Washington, D.C. gunfire study showed that when you take youth off the streets, there are less bystanders, there are less folks to see what's happening. And so crime actually in those instances rose. And then the last thing that I think it's important to note is these curfews disproportionately criminalize children of color in our communities. And so there's evidence of that. Austin, Texas had a curfew. They took it off the books and they saw a decrease in youth victimization by 12%. And they credit that with strengthened police community relations.
Because I mentioned Detroit, Chicago, Washington, Charlotte, Raleigh, although there are other cities that are also considering and enacting these curfews, but because I mentioned those cities, Jeffrey on Facebook wants to know, are these needed because of the direct influence or the direct result, Dante, of Democrat leadership?
I certainly don't believe so, because I mentioned earlier cities like Nashville, Indianapolis, Minneapolis, and others. This is a national phenomenon that's going on with teen takeovers. The one point I want to make as it relates to law enforcement locally and how it may impact or disproportionately impact a subset of folks is, you know, that depends on who is running your local law enforcement. And as we have seen with Chief Patterson, someone who went to school here, who went through police academy here and literally cut her teeth here in CMPD, the whole concept of community policing is something that is front and center here within CMPD in the city of Charlotte. So we are community led with our policing and our enforcement, and it's not a ready, fire, aim approach at all. This is a round of full community approach.
Okay, we have 1 minute left, and we have to talk about third spaces. We know that traditionally kids used to congregate at shopping centers because it was fun, and they could window shop or whatever, have to go to the food court. But a lot of shopping centers have discouraged and have enacted their own curfews for teenagers. So where do they go? Is that part of the discussion at City Council, providing third spaces?
Yes, absolutely. And what I will say for City Council is throughout this month, the month of July, we are having teen nights on every Friday night at Eastway Recreation Center in District 1 up until 11 o'clock. Teens can come for free, play basketball, have snacks, do whatever there. We're having pool parties at Ray Splash Planet and others. We're providing opportunities for youth to go to Mecklenburg County Rec Centers. But this is a full community approach. We need other folks to participate and create these spaces.
And you have to put them on social media so kids know where they are.
Yes, sir.
Dante Anderson, City Council District 1, Dr. Susan McCarter, UNC Charlotte, and Quentin Canty on his way to college. Thank you all for being here.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. Our intern is Emmy Berger. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to visit past episodes, or to sign up for the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.